I'm very happy now to welcome performance artist Kathleen Fontaine. Her one-woman show, Learning to Stay, will be performed this weekend at the Rail Yard Performance Center, September 11th, 12th, and 13th at 8 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's an honor to be here.
So this is a very intense one-woman show about, I mean, I'm assuming it's completely autobiographical.
Completely autobiographical, yes.
About subjects ranging from earliest childhood to a period in your life where you were heavily into some very scary drugs.
True. The quick pitch is I just simply say to people, I'm a crack addict. I'm a recovering crack addict, and it's my story of hope and healing. But, yes, it does venture into early childhood sexual trauma without being at all graphic, and that's where the performance art piece really serves the piece. A lot of things are just suggested, and I don't need to go into over-the-top details. But it's intense on every level. Somebody summed it up. They're like, I felt every emotion I'd never felt in my life all in one hour, never mind one night.
Right. It's an hour-long performance. And I think when you are developing a show like that, I would think that the process of deciding what details to put in is a very tricky business.
It's a very tricky business. It took me a year to eke this show out of my body, to get it on paper. I've been working with my director, Susan Mealy, for almost 16 years now. We did sketch comedy in San Francisco and in Los Angeles together. We performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival doing sketch, again, a whole different thing. I moved here to Santa Fe from Los Angeles, where I'd also done stand-up comedy, and I thought I was done with performance. I came here for rehab, and I thought all that was just part of my past. But this story needed to be told. And I'm still scared that I'm doing it. I can't believe I'm doing it. This is the second run. I had a phenomenal feedback for the first run. A lot of enthusiasm for this one.
Where was the first run?
Same place.
Oh, okay.
Rail Yard. They've been amazing. It took me a year to get it out. I went to Baltimore, where Susan is from, to do rehearsals. We rehearsed at the center stage there, and I didn't have it fully on paper. I had outlines and parts and bits and pieces, and the show finally got written is she'd say, go in the other room, go in the actor's lounge, you have 40 minutes, write the second part, come back. I wrote it, we get up, move it, work it. She's like, okay, go write the third part, come back, same thing. So that's how it finally made it to paper. Through many tears, it's just been a laborious, it's been like a birth. I don't have any kids. Susan has four. She's like, I birthed my fifth child with your show.
I don't know if that's the right word, but at the beginning you put on very simple costumes, no costumes, almost no props, just a few little things, and you put on these hefty garbage bags. And I thought that's just a great metaphor for your own baggage, your own garbage, externalizing
and
it.
And the layers I think it's the beauty of this piece, and I didn't realize it until I performed it, that it's reaching so many different people, because it's the human condition of struggling to be okay with whoever you are, to struggling to be okay in your body, in your gender, identity, sexual orientation, whatever's up for you. It's just that human condition of, like, am I really okay just being? Can I just be? And we're such a non-being culture, and thank God we're getting back to that. The paradigm is shifting. Be here now is a big part of my show.
Right.
Be here now. And I still am struggling with that. I'm 3.5 years into recovery, and every day is an adventure and a chore to just be okay with where I am and who I am and who I'm becoming.
There are so many stories of sexual abuse and recovery, and it makes me sad. I was watching the performance on the DVD, and it just makes me sad that every person who's going through this on some level has very similar struggles. And for each person, they're so hard. Even if you know what everybody else has gone through, you still have to go through the whole darn thing yourself.
Well, you know, I first started therapy in L.A. I went on a trip with my father, came back, and acted out in a big way, got in trouble, started therapy right away. And this is all included in the show. And I couldn't hear or see much at the time. I was just in a total daze. Going to therapy 3 times a week, there was one little Robert Frost quote she had on her bulletin board, and it said, the only way out is through. And that made sense. Nothing else made sense. That made sense. And I go, then I need to just feel all this crap. I need to feel all this intensity that I've been hiding from, that I didn't even know was there. The intense rage, the sadness that never made sense. You know, I tried to always make sense of it. Like, is it because I grew up poor and isolated and marginalized? Or is it because I grew up gay in Virginia in a small town? What's the reason I'm so rageful and I'm so sad? Finally, hello. I got messed with as a pre-verbal infant, you know, and so my whole life fell apart. But I trusted something, you know, universal presence, God, call it what you will. I didn't even have a real deep spirituality at the time, but I trusted something enough to know, yeah, the only way out is through. I have to go through this.
And you trusted these various therapists who, even when you didn't believe in yourself, they held out some hope for you.
Oh, yeah. And the beauty of it, my therapist, Shelley Pusich, in Los Angeles, she actually drove out from L.A. to see the first run in April.
Oh, that's
so great. And you know, that just felt like coming full circle. She didn't think I was going to live. I didn't want to live, but she really didn't think I was going to make it.
Would you, I don't know if you want to speak about the experience of getting into crack cocaine. I don't know many people who have done that, but it seemed like it was so easy to get into it and so dangerous in a very rapid, out of control way.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, and this is all included in the show. I was doing therapy 3 times a week, like I said, with Shelley in L.A. Something about me and diapers as a baby came up, and I just blanked out, just went away. My whole body just said, we're not going there, and I shut down. And that night, I got online looking for sex. I'm a sex and love addict as well. Got online looking for that, and this is all included in the show. And not only did I find sex, found someone that wanted to act out a consensual rape scene. Never have done any of that in my life or been a part of that, and that felt like a fit at the time. Partook in that, and that night, you know, after 8 hours of nonsense, she offered me crack, and I didn't hesitate. And that's when I knew this is really crazy. I didn't hesitate because I was in that place of like, I can't do life. I just can't do it. I've tried my best to show up and be authentic and be a part of the planet, and it's not happening. The pain was too overwhelming.
I think it also brings a very important set of realizations to the whole phenomenon of drugs and people talking about how to deal with the drug problem and legalization and all these things. I mean, just the fact that when people get into a drug that harsh, they're really trying to get away from something, and that something, whether it be sexual abuse or poverty or all sorts of other social ills, is part of the bigger picture.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, they have a saying in recovery, you can go from Park Avenue to Park Bench, meaning you can be living the high life, and then you say yes to drugs, and you can just lose everything like that.
Well, I think the quote, the money amount quoted was $30,000 a month?
Yes, I happened... And this is a God thing, I think. This is a, you know, universal, something was holding me when I couldn't hold myself. Of the person I found online happened to be a trust fund baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't have to work. She, you know, that was her income free a month from her dad's company. And I was getting high in the Hollywood Hills. I'm a crack addict in recovery. I've never been in a dumpster. I've never eaten out of a dumpster. I've never sold my body. I've never been in a crack house. That's really rare. It's really rare, and I get it now that I was being held, and I'm so grateful. I'm so blessed. It's amazing I can even form sentences, and I'm still sometimes I struggle with that. But, you know, 6 months into my use, and I used every day, not all day, for a year and 3 months. I mean, we never ran out of it. She had Altoid 10 fulls. What am I trying to say? Altoid 10s full of the stuff. And insanity. And at like 6 months into my use, I couldn't. You know, mid-sentence, I'd be like, you know, we'd be processing all the time, my childhood or her childhood. You just talk nonstop on this drug. You just can't stop talking. We'd be up for days processing and processing. And I would, you know, I remember this one moment in particular because it was, I caught it and I thought it was insane, but we kept smoking anyway. I was like, oh my God, I totally get it. I don't remember the rest of the sentence. And that's exactly how I said it, but much faster.
Right.
It was like I had this epiphany, and then mid-sentence, I couldn't remember how to finish the sentence or what the epiphany was. And we both looked at each other like, this is getting kind of scary. And then we picked our pipes back up and said, right back at it. That's the reality of that drug. You can't put the pipe down until you do.
We're talking to performance artist Kathleen Fontaine. Her one-woman show this weekend is called Learning to Stay at the Rail Yard Performance Center. What was your companion in crime, so to speak? What was she all about? Did you stay in touch? Did you go into your rehabilitation processes together, or did it push you apart?
We were evicted from the house she was renting. All of our stuff was put into public storage, big boxes. She continued smoking crack, and everything got auctioned off, so she lost everything. Her father, last I heard, had cut her off. She did end up going to Betty Ford, which was her, I think, fifth or sixth rehab facility. And I don't know. And then she went, I think she pretty much went right back out. I did talk to her shortly thereafter, but I cut off all ties. I did leave her thinking, you know, I was so idealistic, and it was really the drug talking. And it was also my sex and love addiction. Like, oh, we'll both get clean and sober. This is, we're meant to be together. We'll get clean and we'll work this out. You know, I honestly don't know if she's alive or dead. I hold good thoughts for her, and I hope she's on her healing path. That's the message, too, I want to say. This is a hopeful show. You know, it's not nitty-gritty. It's not going to leave people. I mean, you're going to feel your heart, and you're going to be opened up in a way that maybe you haven't been opened up in a while. But the message at the end, it just pulls it all together, and it's about hope and healing and possibility. Because when I crawled into Santa Fe, which I did, I didn't think hope was for me. I thought that was for rich people. I had everybody else but me could have hope. And now I'm walking every day into a hopeful future, and I have a hopeful present. I have a beautiful life.
Was there a moment when you knew that you were really out of the woods?
In terms of,
I'm not going to go back to drugs, I'm going to be okay.
You know, it's funny, my director's in town, like I said, from Baltimore, and we passed some place the other day on the road, I can't remember what it's called, Concrete Jungle. She's like, what's that? I go, it's a smoke shop. I said, don't worry, I've never been in. But the addict in me stores where all the smoke shops in town are.
Right.
I know where they are, because if I need crack, well, I don't know where to get it in this town. But the addict in me, that's still cunning, baffling, and powerful, and very much alive, comes up and stores that information. It's like, oh, if things get too bad, I can go to one of those smoke shops and ask them where to get crack. That's, you know, I label it the addict in me. It's alive and well, but it's not as big as it used to be. My show's called Learning to Stay, because I finally learned to stay in myself, in my body, in my relationship with myself, with my partner, with my life here. I'm learning about integrity. I'm learning about that it's safe to be vulnerable. It's safe to be in my truth, whatever it is. You know, people that love me, they want that from me, you know? So sharing that with her, she was baffled, and she's like, what? I go, no, that's just the reality. If you're an addict, you know what's going on and where things, you know, if you drink, you know where every bar is. Maybe you don't go in them, but you're storing information for someday if you think you can't do it, if you can't do life on life's terms, if you can't, you know, if you just can't not deal with the pain. I really, when I first started the recovery, I considered it all pain management. You know, doing drugs was pain management, and then getting clean was pain management. It was just the flip side of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, the second part being probably a lot harder and more conscious.
Way harder. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I've been in treatment, been private practice with a therapist since I left rehab, and I was in rehab for 3 months. And so I've been working nonstop on my trauma work. I have found the best team here in Santa Fe, and I say, you know, if you come to Santa Fe and you want to heal and you can't, then you don't. You just don't want to, because there's every possible modality available here. Some of the most amazing.
Yeah, if you can afford them. I mean, it can run up a big bill.
True, true. A lot of people do trades, though, and I have, you know, I've been blessed in the other department.
I was thinking when watching your performance, that being a therapist, on the one hand, must be very fulfilling when your patient really does get better, and on the other hand, not a whole lot of fun during a lot of these crazy sessions that you depict in your show.
Talk about detachment. I mean, when Shelley, you know, sent me, when I made my way here to the Life Healing Center in Santa Fe, it was like she finally knew there's a chance I'll live, because I'm getting some help finally. But that letting go, because you just never know what's going to happen with people. So there's a real lesson in detachment, I think, for them. I haven't asked them point blank, but yeah.
You're a performer. You've done stand-up comedy and radio and all sorts of things. How does doing this compare to the other kinds of performance you've done? I mean, obviously, it gave you the skills to do some of the real acting in it.
Yeah, I'm pretty much self-taught in terms of acting. I was always the class clown, you know. But stand-up, more so than sketch. Stand-up was really, I was working out some deep core issues with doing stand-up. I was standing on stage doing my stuff, which was very cerebral. A lot of crowds got it, a lot of crowds didn't. I couldn't have played comedy clubs. I never tried to. I did the whole art scene underground, you know. Stand-up for me was about being up on stage and on some level asking my, you know, asking the audience, asking the universe, is it okay that I'm here? Is it okay that I'm taking up space? Am I really funny? Is it okay that I'm alive? Because that was some deep stuff I was dealing with. And when they laugh, you know, when I had a good night, I'm like, oh, awesome, I deserve to be here. When I didn't have a good, when I didn't have a good night, I was considering suicide. I mean, that literally showed me what I'm working with in terms of my own mental, you know.
Yeah, it's sort of like you're putting yourself in a position of getting conditional love.
Exactly. sketch comedy was more of a different thing. I worked with two other women, Susan Mealy being one of them, and then Serena Irwin. We did. We were a sketch comedy group called Nude Coffee. We liken ourselves to In Living Color, but we were all white girls. We pushed the limits. We played everybody from blind people. I mean, just anybody and everybody. And the beauty of it was, I mean, we'd have blind people come to our shows and love it. Like, their friend would sit next to them and whisper what's happening, and they'd be roaring, laughing. And I loved the community aspect of what that was, theater and bringing people together, and all of us laughing at humanity, not laughing at pointing fingers and laughing at somebody, laughing at the human condition. And I think that was part of what brought me into this.
And laughing at ourselves.
Exactly, laughing at ourselves. And this doesn't compare. This is something I never thought I would do. This is something I wasn't sure if I could do. Prior to the first run in April, I was like, really? Do people really want to come hear my story? Do I really have a story? Is it you know, worthy of an hour? Is it blah, blah, blah? You know, it's doing my normal spin. It is, and I can say that. I can say that. It touches people, and that's what I want to be about now. I want to give back. I want to let other people know there's hope. No matter what their situation is, if they're feeling like there's no hope, there's hope. And it's not just the Obama campaign, too late. That was a big part of it, too. But, I mean, there is hope, man. And I didn't know that. And I'm living it now. You know, I'm thriving. My whole life has been about surviving. I'm thriving for the first time in my life. And I'm soon to be 42. So I'm just blessed. And I'm really, really grateful.
Kathleen Fontaine is a performance artist. Her show this weekend is called Learning to Stay. It's at the Rail Yard Performance Center on Paseo de Peralta right here in Santa Fe. And it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, this September 11th, 12th, and 13th at 8 in the evening. For more information, you can call 946-0464. Kathleen, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. You can hear us at my podcast site, which is santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz. Thank you.